This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
I thought you were going to say nah.
Yeah, I was like, I heard nah, and I was like, yeah, they are.
I know. I was like, I don't know what I'm saying.
Now back to our show. What's up? What's up? Welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. Our theme this season is all about power couples. Like always, we will focus on the ladies from these dynamic duos. So, no need to worry. In today's episode, we will tell the story of Ina Alto and Alyssa Alto. I'll explain more in a bit, but for those of you that don't know, Ina was the wife of the famous modernist architect Alvar Aalto. But what you didn't know was that she herself was a Finnish architect and designer of many things. I'm Jessica Rogers, celebrating International Women's Day based out of Washington, D.C.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, wearing purple and celebrating all the ladies out there from San Francisco.
And I'm Nerjiri Rivas. Shout out to all the mujeres from Houston, Texas. Did y'all know that this year's International Women's Day theme is hashtag break the bias?
No.
Yes. Well, I did. Every year they have a theme, and this year, hashtag break the bias means it's all about gender equality, equity, and inclusion. So the more you know.
There you go. Okay, now for our disclaimer. The three of us are not historians, nor are we experts on this subject. We're just sharing stories about the information we find about each woman. If we get our facts a little mixed up, please forgive us, leave us a comment, and we will all continue learning together.
All right. So our story begins on January 25th, 1894 in Helsinki, where Ina Maria Mandelin was born as the 11th out of 13 children to Johanna and Juho Mandelin.
13 children is so many. I actually lived in a house growing up that the previous family that owned it had 13 kids.
Oh my God. How many rooms did it have?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of rooms, but it wasn't like every kid had their own room. It was like a situation where I think they kept adding on to the house. So it just was a weird layout. But I think a lot of the kids shared rooms.
I hope so.
That's interesting. I imagined a mansion at first, but you painted a different picture. Or wait, was it a mansion and you're being humble about it? Did you grow up in a mansion, Lizzie?
It was not a mansion. It was just like a rambling old house with rooms off of rooms that...
Or like Frankenstein together, perhaps.
Yes.
Frankenstein house.
Yeah. Okay. You know, keep it humble. All right. But it was huge. Okay. Anyway. So for I know from my research, she lived a relatively comfortable life. Her family was a typical working class family. The mother was a homemaker. The father was a railway conductor. However, I did find out that in 1906, the family would change their last name from Mandolin to Marcio.
Interesting. Do you know why they changed their name, Jessica? I feel like we've seen this with a few of our ladies before.
We just talked about it this season with Dora God.
Yeah.
That's true. There are several reasons why someone would change their last name. I actually found out that this was something really easy to do back then. And in this case, I was able to find out that back then, when Aino was born, Finland was technically a self-governing republic of the Russian Empire. But in 1906, an electoral law came into effect, which, by the way, this law granted the women's right to vote, and it made it the first country in Europe to do that.
Way to go, Finland.
Self-rich.
Yes. So... at the time, a lot of Finnish nationalists changed their Swedish name or some Russian-sounding surnames to a more Finnish variation. So there you go.
Interesting. I like that. Going back to their roots.
Oh, mm-hmm. I can see me doing something like that if I had lived those times.
Yeah. Okay. So back to Aina. Her family changed their last name. She grew up pretty normal. And in the fall of 1913, Aino enrolls at Helsinki's University of Technology to study architecture. She was one of only three women to enroll that year.
Yeah.
Way to go, Aino.
Yeah. So she wasn't the first. And actually, Finland was one of the first countries to formally open up architecture studies to women.
I'm loving all this progressiveness coming out of Finland.
Me too. Mm-hmm. We should go visit this place.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Before we get ahead, right after graduation, Aino worked at a couple of firms in Helsinki, and then she moved north to Jyväskylä to work at our homeboy Alvar Aalto's firm called Office of Architecture and Monumental Art by Alvar Aalto in 1924. And by the way, Jyväskylä was Aalto's hometown.
Okay, that's really cute, but what is up with Aalto's firm's name? Office of Architecture and Monumental Art by Alvar Aalto. Like, what?
I mean, yeah.
He was very sure of himself.
Yeah. You know, yes. You know what? Let's talk real quick about Alvar Aalto while we're at it.
Yes. Since we're there.
You know, Mr. Humble was a Finnish architect and designer, and he was part of Siam with Corbusier, Jane Drew, Frank Lloyd Wright, Minette de Silva, yada, 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 Starchitects. And he had this office of monumental art. So there you go. Listeners, this guy was a big deal.
Yeah. So he was known for Scandinavian modernism. And his projects use a lot of natural materials from the area, like wood and particularly bentwood furniture. He also believed in designing the project as a whole, so would get into the details of furniture and hardware as well as like the overall architecture. As such, in Scandinavian communities, he is referred to as, quote, the father of modernism.
Yes. So interesting fact, though, Alvar wanted to start his firm in Helsinki, but he wasn't getting the proper recognition that he wanted to. So that's why he ended up going back to his hometown so that he could have his hometown street cred. But anyway, yeah. Alvar Aalto, he's an interesting dude. And in 1924, the same year as when Aino begins working with him, they get married.
Oh, snap. That was quick.
Yeah.
I wonder if they had a thing in college and then she like came back, or if it was just a quick romance at the office.
Yeah, it seems like there was something happening in order for her to move north and essentially elope
Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of unknown that something we can only imagine. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Something was definitely brewing.
I'll fill in the gaps with my imagination. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But what I can tell you is about their honeymoon, because their honeymoon became an arc venture of Italy. During their trip, they were able to absorb a lot of the Italian modern influences that can be seen in Aalto's first masonry building, the interiors of the Javascia Workers' Club.
Ay, sono gelosa di questa luna di miele.
That sounds like a great honeymoon. Musta sukainen.
Well, along with that project and a few others, Aina would give birth to a daughter named Johanna, or Hani for short, in 1925.
Cute.
I like that you say the daughter is another project. You know, I guess children are lifelong projects.
Yeah, lifelong projects. Something to be proud of, for sure. Yes. And with Aina, they would have another project when she gave birth to their son, Hamilcar Aalto, in 1928.
Hani and Hami.
Supper!
So, yes. Despite having kids, Aina was running things, okay? Together, Aina and Alvar, they worked equally. However, in other accounts, the son, Hamilcar, Hami, would cause his mother doing the homemaker duties, then going to the firm, and then to the job sites, and basically doing it all, while Alvar would lounge around, draw for a bit, and then go take a nap.
Seriously?
Okay. Mm-hmm. First off, way to go, Aino, for being a boss lady mama. But Alvar, listen.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Alvar did work on several projects, including their own home office, a.k.a. Villa Aalto.
Oh, yes. Villa Aalto is actually a really cool project. The house was originally built in a very natural area, so you feel like you're surrounded by nature. And the organization of rooms tries to get as much natural south-facing light into the main spaces as possible. And what I remember most about it, though, was how the interiors were designed using natural materials. Lots of wood and burnished brass, and the design was so intricate, even down to the door hardware or the railing for the stairs. And it was very ergonomic and earthy modern, almost. I feel like that's the best way I can describe it. It's very cozy.
You know, this reminds me of Lena's glass house and how important it was for her to include nature into her project. There's something even more natural about the way Villa Aalto approaches this. All the wood is very rustic and cozy, like you describe it, Lizzie. And I think that's what a home should feel like, cozy.
Yeah. So I will say that this aspect of a rustic modern, that came from Alvar. He had a strong sense of nature and humans, very anti-chrome robot machine era construction that other people might have seen.
Well, that's probably why the Scandinavian style is so popular even to this day in home design, because it's very human and people want a home to feel human, not like a factory. Don't get me wrong, I love when warehouses are renovated into lofts, but sometimes they don't feel like a home. They need that soft wood nature touch, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like most people are afraid of a home labeled modern or contemporary because they assume it will be cold and not homey. It kind of reminds me of hygge and how popular that has become.
Wait, Lizzie, what's hygge?
So hygge is a Danish word, and it's this concept of cozy and homey, kind of. And so it's become a really popular thing that people are trying to kind of like achieve in their home. You know, certain things are hygge, like comfy socks or fires and like a hot cup of tea and a candle or something, you know, very kind of homey and cozy. You're sitting inside on a cold winter night next to the fire kind of thing.
That sounds nice, especially now as it's really cold in Houston.
How cold is cold?
Shush.
Yeah.
It's cold for me.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, speaking of cold and how cold it is in Houston, I also think that modern is not necessarily cold. I think that modernism is really misunderstood. Just wanted to put that out there. It can be hygge and modern.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But anyway, back to Villa Aalto, Jessica.
I'm about to rant on the word modern, and we don't have time for that.
We do not. So there you go. There's that. That's it. That's the famous Villa Aalto in Helsinki. So before that, though, they had moved the firm and family to Turun to work on other projects, such as the Turun Sanomat building and another notable project called the Pamio Sanatorium, which is a tuberculosis treatment facility. Then they would later move to Helsinki and completed their home office, Villa Aalto.
What was Aino's role?
Oh, so our girl Aino, she basically designed all of the interior and furnishings for all of these projects.
While Alvar took naps? And okay, maybe he designed the exterior too between the naps?
I mean, yeah, they basically had this understanding that Alvar would work on the exterior and Aino would work on the interiors. So they were in sync with each other and they would offer full trust within each other's capabilities.
That's good. I like that about a lot of our power couples this season, that they complement each other in the best ways.
Yeah, it sounds like they had a good division of labor and played to their strengths.
Exactly. So Aino became really good with interior and furniture design, so much so that together with her hubby and two other people, they would create Artek, a separate company that produced and marketed some of their popular furnishings from their previous projects.
Ooh, I love that they started a company together and that it still exists. I'm actually looking through the website right now. Their furniture looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, is that where the bentwood furniture came into play?
Yes. So reading how they talked about this furniture company, it kind of reminded me of a future episode alert. We're going to do an episode on Ray Eames. Because like Ray, Aino's goal was to make these items that they're producing more accessible and practical so that they could be mass produced and sold through this company that they started. So anyway, I don't want to give too much just yet about Ray, but Aino was basically the head of design and lead for all design developments. The amount of various furniture designs in her portfolio, we could compare to another future lady, Florence Noel, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Lots of good teasers for future episodes, Jessica. Stay tuned, listeners.
Yes, so many exciting things happening. But anyway, so a lot of the furnishings and interiors that she created with Alvar for his projects, they would get reproduced and sold through their Artek company.
Ihana.
Are they all credited to just him on the site?
Well, on the site, they do recognize Aino and include a short biography of her on their website, but they credit their glassware work to Aino, which I can talk a little bit more later.
Okay, good.
They better.
Yeah. So we mentioned a few of her and Alvar's projects earlier, but let's list some of their more famous ones and Aino's role in each. Y'all ready?
Yo!
Menanyo!
First, the Baker House Dormitory at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Aino did those interiors.
Ooh, this is a cool project. We studied this in school, and actually, my studio visited Boston one year, and we all snuck into the dorm to try and look around.
That's cool. How was it?
I mean, we didn't get too far, unfortunately. It's, like, very hard to get far, so we mostly just saw, like, the hallways. It looked like a dorm, you know?
Exciting.
But I did love our professor was the one, like, leading the charge on trying to get into the building.
I feel like there's a lot of stories we can swap of us trying to sneak in to buildings.
Yes, that could be a whole Shura episode.
Yes. I also feel like architects and architecture adjacent folks should get a free visitor's pass to any building just so that they can see it.
Yes. But the building was very cool.
Good. Okay. So speaking of cool, our next project, Villa Maria, which I think some of our listeners might be familiar with. Well, on the Artek website, you can find a similar pendant lamp that Aino designed for the Villa Maria.
I love that house. The interiors are very similar to Villa Aalto with materials, and it just has that cozy hygge vibe. I love hearing that Aino was the one behind the designs.
Yeah, I like the staircase in that project. Mm-hmm. And now that I know that it was mostly Aino, I like it even more.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so along with furniture and light fixtures and stair railings, Aino also became known for her glassware and textiles. So in my research, they made a lot of comparisons with Aino to our episode 32 lady, Eileen Gray. One, because they had that textile collection and the fact that they both had their own furniture slash textile store. Although, if you can recall from Eileen's, hers was a short-lived, whereas Aino's still exists today.
Loving all the connections. And that's cool that Aino's still exists today.
Mm-hmm. Gonna get me some Aino glasses.
Mm.
Okay, yes. So Aino's glassware pieces were noted to be very timeless, practical, and accessible. Okay, so not to toot her own horn, but toot toot beep beep, because you guys know those ribbed-like glasses that you see all over IKEA?
Not really, but I don't do a lot of shopping.
Yeah, I can't quite picture them. My IKEA glasses are smooth.
All right, okay. Well, when you see them, you'll definitely recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say this. Aino was the originator. Actually, I would argue that first came Aino, then came IKEA.
Bro, that's a hot take.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said it.
So basically, Aino's design influence lives in a lot of homes and people don't even know.
Mm. Yup. And Aino's role in the company Artek was mostly as head of design. But with the passing of their managing director, Aino would step into that role in 1935.
Take the wheel, Aino.
Yeah.
So outside of work, Aino joined the Board of Architects, an association of female architects, similar to the group that she had back in college. And its goal was to improve the position and situation of female architects in Finland.
Lifelong mission of Aino's.
Mm-hmm. Then in 1946, Aino was diagnosed with cancer. But that didn't stop her. You know why, ladies. Because in 1947, Aino would attend a SIAM meeting in Switzerland. Alvar had attended meetings before, but this was the first record that I have seen of her attending those meetings, too.
I think at some point we should have a charrette about the ladies of SIAM. Mm. I just started reading a paper on this subject, and we should discuss this more in the future.
Mm.
Yes, I agree. Well, ladies, on January 13th, 1949, at the age of just 54, Aino passed away.
That's so sad and so young. Oh my
gosh. Yeah, mm-hmm. It feels like the good are dying young this season.
Mm.
Yeah. So Alvar was, of course, heartbroken. Following his career, others would say that Aino's death was a pivotal moment in his, that his designs would become more monumental. That there's one aspect where Alvar got much bigger projects after her passing. There's that, but I would like to think that Alvar was doing those projects in honor of Aino. And when I think of the word monumental, I think of legacy buildings, right? And people might not live forever, but buildings will. And I believe that Aino's death made that very clear to Alvar and how he would approach buildings afterwards.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting how that would like affect how his design style changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at the beginning of the episode, I had mentioned another woman's name, Alyssa, who became Alvar's second wife.
Oh, right. I've been so focused on Aino that I forgot about Alyssa. Sorry, Alyssa.
Oh, so he found love again? Yeah, like, I totally forgot that you mentioned someone else in the intro. I was mentally preparing my little Carrington monologue, so now this feels like a bonus. Bonus episode!
Yes, bonus it is. All right. Alyssa Kiese Makinieme was born on November 22nd, 1922. So, not much can be found on her life before she became an architect, but we could just jump to when she did become an architect in 1949 and started working at Alvar's office.
Oh, an office romance part two.
Alvar has a type,
clearly.
I mean, well, they did get married in 1952.
Okay, so there was a mourning period, at least, for Aino.
There's a gap, but a little bit more. You're jumping ahead of me. Okay, so Alyssa was working at Aalto's office during a time when they were winning a lot of competitions and getting a lot of big commissions. But Alyssa was a hard worker. She soon became in charge of major projects like the Maison Louis Carré and the Sinatsalo Town Hall.
Way to go, Alyssa.
Mm-hmm.
Love all the ladies taking charge on this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, I don't think her role in these projects was the same as Aino's, but I did read that Alvar would try to make Alyssa look like Aino and trusted her like his first wife, project-wise. But their work dynamic wasn't really defined. However, as you can imagine, Alvar being 24 years older than her, as he got older, Alyssa would take over more of his projects.
24 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Wait, so he was just looking for an Aino replacement? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
This is a little creepy.
Yeah.
Not as much the age difference, but the mini Aino he was trying to create.
Yes.
Like, this is how thrillers start. Some single white female vibe.
Yes. No, for
sounds
real,
to
though.
Me like Alvar's mourning period didn't quite end.
Yes, I know. I was like giving him the benefit of the doubt with the mourning period, but I'm taking it back.
Yeah, it gets kind of creepy. Like, in my research, they would say of how, like, Alvar would want Alyssa to, like, dress like her, wear her hair like her, like, how the first wife did.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's kind of...
That's a little bit much. I agree. The age thing is, like, that's a big gap, but, you know, fine. But...
Yeah.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's strange, but, you know, everyone grieves differently. And I mean, Alyssa didn't seem to mind.
Yeah, you know,
or she didn't have time to worry. It's like, sure, you want me to dress up like her? I don't care because
she was working her butt off.
Yeah. Yeah, she was getting work done. That's okay. Right. She worked on together, Alyssa and Alvar, they worked on several projects together. One being their summer house, nicknamed the Experimental House, or the Muratsalo Experimental House.
What was experimental about it?
Okay, so not so much the house itself, but the experiments that Alvar would do there. Alvar was very interested in bricklaying as evidence in some of his designs. So at this house, he would experiment with several arrangements of brick surfaces. He would paint at this house. He would even work on a design for a fast motorboat that he would call Nemo Profeta in Patria, which translates to no man is a prophet in his own land.
Okay. So the house itself wasn't an experiment, but he used it to try out different things and designs. So it was like his lab.
Mad right. Boat scientist vibes happening here.
I mean, what can I say? The man was very eclectic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eccentric. I love it.
So speaking of, on May 11th, 1976, Alvar Aalto passed away at the age of 78 due to cancer.
Oh, rest in peace, Alvar.
Hmm.
Yes. So our girl, Alyssa, she would be the one to complete his projects, like the Aalto Theater in Essen, the Riola Church, the Sainayoki Civic Center, just to name a few. She would also lead the restoration and conservation of Alvar's earlier projects that he did with Aino, including the Viborg Library.
I appreciate that she was invested in protecting Aino's legacy as well as Alvar's.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa, take all the control. Take all the control.
Hey. Okay, so now Alyssa also worked on a few of her own projects, like the Villa Auta'aho and the SOS Children's Village in Tapiola, Espoo. She also designed some tactile patterns that made an appearance at a few exhibitions and was included in the Artex company portfolio.
I like that she was able to keep going on her own.
Yeah, good for her for doing her own thing.
Yeah. Alyssa would become a long-term board member of the Artic Company until she passed away from cancer as well at the age of 71 on April 13th, 1994.
Cancer. Well, the relationship started out a little creepy, but Alyssa made the best of it, it seems. So good for her and the legacy that she left behind.
Yeah, agreed. It sounds like in the end, she was able to find her own place, even though maybe Alvar started by wanting her to be more like Aino.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about Alyssa, just as much as I wanted to talk about Aino, because to me, it seemed like there was this undiscussed respect that Alyssa had for Aino and the work that she had did with Alvar, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it must be very difficult to marry a widower and to feel like you have to fill a romantic and professional void that was left behind in this case. But like you say, in this case, it seems like Alyssa recognized all there was to learn from Aino, and she did and moved forward.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like Alyssa was very respectful of Aino and of the relationship that came before her.
Yeah. So I also wanted to make sure to talk about both of these women because, yeah, we learned about Aalto in school and studied his work. But it was Aino that should be credited for her contributions at the beginning and Alyssa for continuing on their legacy afterwards.
Yeah, there's this big chunk of the story that we're missing. And I'm so happy we got to fill some huge gaps today. It was really good to hear both stories together and to hear the parallels between Aino and Alyssa.
Agreed. Thank you for sharing both of their stories with us, Jessica.
You got it, chicas. Okay, actually, let's pause for a quick word from our sponsors. Yeah, that's right. We got some sponsors. What's up?
Monograph is building a community of firm owners and operations leaders who are looking for solutions that align with their firm's values. Also, they're building the only cloud-based practice operations software built exclusively for architects by architects.
Monograph's easy-to-use and beautifully designed software allows you and your teams to know in near real time whether you are on pace to deliver a project on budget. With Monograph, you and your team can plan project schedules, budgets, and assign roles for the team members all in one place. Track a project's financial health with their unique Money Gantt, which takes your team's time and makes it simple to see whether you are on track for financial success. And use their firm-wide revenue forecast to make important strategic decisions.
The best part of Monograph? It doesn't require a degree in finance to use. To experience the difference today, sign up for a free trial at monograph.com.
Okay, check this out, though. Starting today, March 8th through March 10th, Monograph will be hosting Section Cut, a virtual conference. Here, they'll bring firm owners, operations, and project leaders together to learn from success stories and workshops on how to improve their businesses. There's even going to be an all-day virtual career fair where employers pitch their firms. You can register today to reserve a seat by visiting sectioncut.com or check out our show notes for a link.
Yes, be sure to check out that link and head on over to the Section Cut virtual conference. Our friends and fellow podcasters, Evelyn Lee and Janine Chastain from Practice Disrupted will be speaking.
Yeah.
Today, we are also sponsored by NCARB's Analysis of Practice Study. NCARB's Analysis of Practice Study is your opportunity to shape the future of architecture, to share your thoughts on how to improve the profession and how architects can work and collaborate better.
Whether you're an architect or you just work with architects, NCARB wants to hear from you, so make sure your voice is heard.
Yeah, so contribute to the Analysis of Practice Study today. Sign up at ncarb.org/AOP.
Thanks again to our sponsors for supporting our show.
All right, now back to the rest of our show.
All right, now we've reached the second half of the episode, The Caryatid. Nardri, can you begin with your monologue, please?
Yes, here comes my monologue. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. On each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode.
All right, so this week's caryatid goes to... Tavia Forbes and Monet Masters! Yes, that's right. We have a duo. Woo! Tavia and Monet together have an interior design firm called Forbes Masters. Based out of Atlanta, this duo met in 2012 working on a project when they decided to form their own company. So what I thought was interesting about this duo was that, one, they are female Black owned, okay?
Nice.
And their partnership, they realized that they complemented each other. So what one person has, or what one person doesn't have, the other person has that skill set. And together, it makes them create these beautiful designs. So I'll be sure to include a link of their to their website so that you can see their projects. Very colorful, very beautiful. Go Womenhood and Women Partnerships.
Ooh,
I love that.
I'm excited for that. Yeah, I'm going to check that out immediately.
Yeah, I feel like that's so interesting to hear, too. But I think a lot of times that's the best partnerships, right, where you kind of complement each other and have what the other one doesn't, or I guess excel at what the other one doesn't.
Like the three of us, because we complement each other so well. Oh. We were just talking about that.
Okay. I was going to say, like, I know and Oliver.
But I mean, that too. But, I mean, that's why when I read about Tavia Monet, I instantly thought of Aino and Alyssa. But hearing Lizzie speak, I thought about us three. So
that's right.
Three best friends. Okay. Anyway, so here we are at the end of our show. But before we sign off, we want to give a kitosh to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical producer, and most of all, kitosh for all of y'all listening. We hope you enjoyed learning about Aino, Alyssa, and Tavia and Monet, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies. Again, kitosh.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Did you know? Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience that's dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
Ole Kilti, let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your significant others, your favorite furniture makers, your favorite interior designers. Give us 5-star on iTunes. Write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about women bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on Twitter at shebuildspod. Until then, Hivashti.
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 But I want to talk about what we were talking about. How do I bring it back?
Speaking of cold, what about this modern architecture?
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.